Hello and welcome to the EG Property Podcast with me, EG editor Sam McClary. This is the first in a series of discussions we'll be hosting in partnership with HQO as we delve deeper into what really matters in our workplaces. Is it the bricks and mortar? Is it the sustainability rating? Is it, as you might find out a little later, the weird and wonderful amenities that some might include in their offices? Or is it you and the experiences and relationships you create? These are big and important questions in a world where our relationship with how and where we work has changed dramatically. With HQO, EG is creating the Power Properties List, a new ranking for the best workplaces. They don't have to be the biggest, they don't have to have the most exclusive addresses, but they do have to deliver the best experience for the people that use them. Find out more and enjoy this conversation as I meet HQO's EMEA VP of Sales, Sam Warren. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EG Property Podcast. I'm Sam McClary, editor of EG, and I am joined today by another Sam, so it's going to be brilliant. Sam Warren, who's VP of Sales EMEA at HQO. HQO are a new and fantastic partner that we have at EG, and we're here today to talk about a really exciting new project that we're working on together, the EG and HQO Power Properties List. And it's going to be a fascinating project, isn't it? We've just launched it. And Sam, I'd love to, I can wax lyrical about it, but I'd love to get your view on what this list means and I guess why we're working together on it.
No, absolutely, Sam. Look, great. Thank you very much for inviting us in to talk about this. I think, look, we've been quite passionate about experience in buildings for quite some time. But I think as we've developed our Best Spaces to Work programme, which is a global initiative, it's really important that I think we're, you know, tying it in with the markets that we work in. And I think the opportunity for us to work together with EG is a fantastic one. I think, you know, you guys a lot more established than us. I'd say it's about 160 years, I think.
165 and a bit, I think. Yeah,
I'm a little bit off with that, but yeah.
Quite old.
So the fact that you've been serving this market for that period of time, you know, you guys have become really the trusted authority, you know, leaders across the space. And I think what was really pleasing was when you understood our mission, and we saw through the work that you were doing and what your readership was saying that it is really something that is very important, but people still want to learn more about it. And I think combining the Best Spaces to Work program with the Power Properties List is really something that, you know, places it within this market. Two brands coming together, sharing our ideas. I think it's a really good partnership.
So let's go back to, in case there's anyone out there who doesn't know what HQO is and where you came from and why experience matters to you guys. Give us a little bit of the overview of HQO.
Yes, yeah, certainly. So HQO started in Boston back in 2018. I started here in June 2019, first sort of out of North America employee. And the business over time has evolved, but has always been around these sort of fundamentals of driving, I guess, a better experience of people in the workspace. I think it's quite obvious that we spend a lot of our time in the workspace every day, consumes a huge part of our lives. And I think if we help our customers to understand what it is in terms of delivering a better experience, everybody within that, I guess, ecosystem, everything improves for them, whether it's the end user, whether it's the people that own these assets and almost everything in between. And I think we've been passionate about that. But I think it really comes from the basis that we talk to people about what is experience. And I think a lot of people struggle to understand, you know, what is it? How do we deliver it? What sort of things do we need to implement? And I think that's something that we believe we play, you know, a key role within. And as the business has evolved over time, we've seen, you know, the valuable metrics that help people understand that, help, you know, how do we improve these things? And, you know, this year with the development of the Best Spaces to Work program, it's really trying to, I guess, quantify and explain that. And we can talk more in a moment, I guess, about the real estate experience, the metrics behind it. But yes, it's the fundamental thing of what we're trying to deliver.
Okay, fantastic. And let's go into those metrics and the REX score and how you come about delivering that and what it is that anyone who is landlord, tenant, worker needs to engage with you on that.
Yes, I think it's probably good if I set the scene in terms of what REX actually is. You know, REX stands for Real Estate Experience. And essentially that's a methodology where, you know, as an operator, you're aligning your occupier needs in order to deliver enhanced experiences. And I think that in turn delivers a series of positive outcomes, and we can look at those. But I guess the components of the REX sort of methodology is sort of three areas. First of all, there's the REX assessment, and that's a short survey powered by the Leesman methodology, which is one of the businesses that we acquired not that long ago. And that's fundamentally that survey done by the end users of the space. That then rolls up into what we call the REX score, which is a simple 0 to 100 score. And that's generated as a result of each user in the space undertaking the survey. That rolls up so that each occupier company has a REX score. And then in turn, that rolls up to the property. And then importantly, and I think the key differentiator for us here is the REX index. Now, the index is the first and only global benchmark of employee workplace experience. And essentially, that's where we're kind of measuring and quantifying the experience within the property, but measuring it against this global benchmark, which, if we look back at the history of Leesman, sort of over, was it now, nearly 13, 14 years, gathering of all that data, nearly just short of 2 million survey responses, starts to give you a really established set of benchmarks by which you can judge what is good and what is bad. And I think it's that quantifiable metric that has been missing. You know, we talk to a lot of people and they look a lot at utilization data, but that only takes you so far. You know, you've got, people are coming into the buildings. Well, yes, but are they mandated to come in? You know, and I think so it gives us that ability, I think, to look a little bit deeper and find out really what people think.
And what does good look like? And what does bad look like?
Well, I think that's a great question. But I think this is the components. You know, it isn't just one score. It's broken down into different areas. We look at impact, activities and features. And I think when you ask that question, it's what does good look like, I think, within a specific area. You know, in some areas we see on some of the features you get a higher score, the benchmark varies according to what people's typical expectations or people experiences have been, and the benchmark itself does vary. There isn't just one single number, it's a number in each of those categories and each of the subsets within that. But good in terms of our global benchmark, if you're hitting around a 70 out of 100 or above that as an overall aggregated score, then that's deemed to be good. And we get some of the leading workspaces that deliver those scores quite easily. But I think that's the other key thing to understand, is it isn't just about, and I think that's part of, you know, the component that makes up, this isn't just Power Properties for the most amazing, big, shiny buildings. This is for everybody to learn and to understand. And I think there's some areas where you might score really well, and there's some buildings that are limited in what they can do. But if you're understanding what areas are key and what are important, and it's important to drive the best possible score in that space, that too applies to them. So it isn't something that is exclusive for purely the very top end of the market. I think everybody should be thinking of how they can involve themselves within this, and how they can learn and how they can develop.
I really like this approach, that there's no sort of cookie cutter solution to this, and that there are different goods and different bads for different places, different spaces. And I want to touch a bit more on that in a minute, but I do have to ask, has anyone scored 100 yet? And do you ever expect anyone to get there?
I don't know about you, Sam, but I would, 10 out of 10 rarely occurs, right?
So there's so few of us.
Yeah. but no, that's very rarely the case. Very rarely the case.
I wonder, though. Maybe that's a challenge.
Yeah, let's see if we can find one. Yeah.
So, let's go back to this, because that really caught me, the fact that there is no sort of single the best. It can be very much around the area, the building, the type of occupier, I suppose, the type of experience that you're having. And I like that, because I think it creates a different conversation around buildings and workspaces, that it's not just bricks and mortar and the big shiny building, that this is actually about experience and human beings. You know, we talk about property being a people industry, and then we try and put it into yields and bricks and all that sort of stuff, and actually it's more emotional than that. So I wonder if we can touch a little bit more on some of those different things that we see in different markets, different types of space, etc., that the best spaces to work can help bring out, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I think that's the thing I think to point out for people to bear in mind is, yes, you know, best spaces to work is this, you know, a global recognition, a certification program, but ultimately, as I, you know, I spoke of the assessment itself, that can start to derive, you know, insights that can be very useful to everybody. And when I talked about the impacts features, the impact feature and activities components of it. If we look at some of the impact, a lot of that is around very much the sentiment. You know, what do people think of? And it talks about different areas. Things such as, are you proud to bring people to your workplace? You know, do you feel that you're the owner of this space is actually doing anything around the sustainability efforts? And I think when we start looking into the data, it's interesting how people's feelings around that become clear. So, you know, we look at across the European data, 80% of employees agree that the design of the workplace is important to them, but yet we find that 34% don't believe their workplace enables them to work productively. And that's, you know, that's quite key. And I think as a, you know, touched on sustainability, it continues to be an important and rightly so topic. You know, companies nowadays want to invest in sustainability efforts. I think there was a study by Deloitte a while ago that about 70% of employees want to see that. But yet, as we look at the HQO data, about 43% of employees don't believe that the workplace is actually contributing to environmental sustainability. So we might be looking, like you said, at some of the harder metrics and the data that comes out of that. But if people don't believe that's the case, that's fundamentally important. And I think this isn't about one person. This isn't about, you know, either the representative of that company or somebody measuring the data at the building. This is what everybody in that space thinks. And that becomes really powerful when, as we know, people vote with their feet these days. And that's the key part of this.
And you said at the beginning of our conversation that kind of insight is important for every stakeholder in a building, whether you're the occupier, the business utilising that space. That data is really important because it will enable you to retain talent. It's really important for the manager of that space because you get insights on, oh, we could be doing this better, or we need to, you know, push harder here. We don't need to be working as hard there. And it's super important for the landlord as well, because if that business is losing its talent, it's not going to want that space, is it? And then a building without anyone in it isn't worth anything. So really important insights for every part of that chain to grab onto and utilize.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the things, Sam, we're seeing with some of the people who own and operate, not necessarily the best spaces, but the people who really care are really interested in this. And what's also been interesting, some are almost not so much scared off, but find the notion of having those discussions a little bit intimidating. But our position is, if you're armed with those insights, the data from everybody, surely it gives you a far more informed discussion. And we want to be in a world, or we see a world where if you own the building, you're going to the people within the space and sharing those insights, having educated and informed discussions, because one of our big global customers sees this very much as an amenity to be provided for the companies within their buildings across the world. Because wouldn't it be lovely if you can go and say, you know, you've got a problem with people coming into the space each day, rather than mandating them, look, we can see here, these are the things that are being, you know, not delivered so well. They're highly important, we can see that, it's a very important thing to your workforce, but you're not currently delivering on that. And rather than just push it across and say, oh, that's their problem, we don't get involved in the demise. Well, but if there's a problem in there, surely it's better if everyone knows, and we can start to find ways that can deliver upon that. And you're quite right, we've got, as you know, talked about how the sustainability, you just look at it's the younger generations coming into the workforce, that's important to them. And if they don't feel that's been addressed, therein lies, you know, the first problem, and it rolls all the way through. If you struggle with employee retention, you're going to struggle with occupier retention, therefore we've got owners starting to worry about vacancy issues. And I think it really does impact everybody within that value chain, and that's what this is about. Ultimately, you know, at the end, we should be looking overall to, you know, reduce that churn, improve retention, even things like leasing velocity. If you were able to demonstrate that, it surely is an improvement for everybody. And then, you know, talked about, you know, is that our problem or their problem? Well, we shouldn't be having that nature of discussion. But what it does do is it removes all the speculation out of any form of capex for anybody. You can see exactly what those pain points are, and we can, you know, support the discussion to address it.
And that's so important. We've talked for so many years. I know, you know, I've been reporting on real estate for 20 years, and there's always been this, you know, landlord tenant, which we try not to use now,
indeed,
don't we? It's like
you,
property
you know,
owner and
that,
occupier. And there's always been this your problem, my problem, let's not work together. But now people are talking about customers and bringing people close together. And the more that we can have that discussion, that collaboration, the better the better it is for everyone. And this is a tool that maybe enables that discussion to start.
Quite right. And I think it's a rather blunt example, but if you work in a building, you don't know whether those toilets are in your demise, that use the wrong language, landlord's demise. Yep. The end user doesn't know that. So therefore we should be measuring it across the board. And I think that's the key difference of how we've developed that Leesman methodology for operators, because if you look at the feature list, who knows who's responsible for those things? But ultimately that doesn't really matter to the end user, does it? They want that experience to be the best it possibly can be. So let's address it head on.
Yeah. Are there any other sort of insights that you've got from, you know, the work that you've been doing since launch in 2018 that you're seeing as these trends in customer experience and what people want? And have they changed at all from, I guess, pre-pandemic to today?
Yeah, I think, yes. Well, I think one of the things that does actually surprise me is we think of everybody coming into space purely from a sort of collaborative perspective. But globally, this is the one that sort of stood out to me. Globally, 89% of employees feel that when they're in the office, focused work at a desk is the most important activity they need their workplace to support. And I think, you know, we all think of, oh, we'll use the office to come in and collaborate. So that, I think, those are the sorts of statistics that really do help understand why do people come into the building. But I think in terms of the trends, less so from a sort of data and just sort of quoting statistics perspective at you, one of the things I think we've seen that's most interesting is how people are using these insights to adapt the way that they're addressing the issues. You know, we've got, there's a global banking client of ours who they look at their global portfolio, and they therefore choose what leases to renew and which ones to look more critically at in terms of do we break this, you know, do we exit that space based on the REC score of those properties. So they're starting to take it really, really seriously. And then as you know, as we look at the delivery of experience, we're seeing those workplace teams. There's a European bank that I can think of where the workplace experience teams bonuses are tied directly to the REC score, because they see they've understood this is a genuine metric of workplace satisfaction. So if the scores are high, the workplace team is getting their job right. And I think that's when you start to realize how much people, once they've understood it, it becomes applicable in their context. They really do see the hard value in this sentiment data.
Yeah. How do we, because I love this feeling of this idea of experience, not an idea, this experience, and how we are now talking about this in a real estate context. And, you know, maybe even 5 years ago it would have been seen as soft stuff. You don't need to worry about that. Make sure it's a shiny building, give it all the tech that it needs, and then everything will be fine. Now we're talking about human experience and human emotion and the power of that in creating space and place. Do you think that with that, for it to sort of really take off, and it sounds like it is from the examples you've just given of some of your clients, do we need to start changing the language that we use around places and spaces? Should we stop talking about pound per square foot, for example, and start talking about, I don't know, a feeling per square foot or something? I don't know what the metric might be.
We'd love to see that world, definitely. But no, I think this takes my mind to something that we look at a lot at HQO, and something that is valuable to us is this notion of an experience economy. There's a great book written by Joseph Pine actually that looks at that across all different sectors, and there's some great examples in there, you know. But I think from a real estate perspective, absolutely, it's moving away from the notion that space is the commodity. You know, as you said, you pay X pounds for amount of space. And I think as we see that evolve, or as we see it go, you know, kind of up that curve, you're not just looking at it as a commodity. You're sort of thinking what amenities are in there as you're adding different service layers onto that. And it's where those experiential activities and services really make a difference. And how we get to the sort of the charge metric, I'd love, I mean, wouldn't it be fantastic if we got to that position? But I think it comes down to the component of space only delivers so much. You know, people think about, you know, everyone remembers how they felt. You know, experiences are now seen as more valuable than material possessions. You look at, you know, gifting at different times, people aren't buying a commodity so much as an experience for somebody to enjoy. And I think that's what really helps people, you know, engage and retain their top talent, if they feel that their workplace makes them feel in a certain way. And I think you're right, it isn't just a case of putting in some amenities. We've got some amusing statistics about that, but putting in amenity, putting in a tech layer, that isn't really what this is about. This is about delivering that holistic experience where people do remember how they feel. And you're right, you know, ultimately this will in turn deliver a demonstrably higher return on the investment. If you deliver that to the people in your space, of course they're going to pay more for it. You only need to look at those, you know, the buildings that are achieving the top REC scores. Obviously, they're paying high rents for it because people get the services that they need in their daily lives.
You can't dangle amusing statistics in front of me without then sharing some.
I did see your face and said that. Sam. No, there's one anecdote. I'll keep the details light to protect. But no, but there's a building we were aware we actually do work in. Yeah, there's a building we work in where they removed a load of, as you know, talking real estate, net lettable area to install golf simulators, but had no idea if anybody in the building played golf. And you look at that and go, that's an amenity. You know, back in my real estate days, I remember it just got to this race of what sort of amenity could go in, and we saw all sorts, yes, golf course simulators, all sorts of almost gimmicky to attract in the early instance. And okay, that's understandable, but if you're delivering a building, surely you want to be delivering on what the people in there need or what the market says. And you know, this data of course can give you what people, you don't survey on golf course simulators alone, but what amenities are required, and actually deliver what's needed. So yeah, imagine that. Getting rid of a load of lettable space, sticking a golf course simulator, and we don't even know what the population of golf players is. But anyway.
I always find it fascinating when people just assume, and that we've got this great gift of being able to ask people, just ask someone's opinion. And we see it in the planning world as well, don't we? A consultation, yeah. And you know, bad consultation where you say, hey, we're going to do this, and instead of asking, what do you like? What do you need? How can we improve a place to make it better for you? And the same applies within mm-hmm. buildings as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I think that's you raise a good point. That's one of the things I think is quite powerful about this, the REX assessment, is it isn't just a case of, I was talking to someone this week, are you happy? Yes. Well, what do you do with that? You know, what is it that makes it good, and how do we learn upon it? And other people, you know, we're not just asking people, what do you want? This is not an assessment around tell me what you want. This is, what do you do? How important is it to you, and how well are you supported within that? And then obviously the sentiment there. And I think that's the difference. I think you're right with some of the planning consultation. People are sort of, they just simply don't want anything to happen. Well, again, how do you go with that? So this is trying to give a deeper insight.
Fantastic. So let's delve now into the EG Power Properties List powered by HQO. What are we trying to do with it? And how do we want people to engage and get themselves on that list?
Good point. Yeah, good point. So I think the first thing is to get it onto that EG property list. Properties and spaces must first earn that HQO Best Spaces to Work certification. And that's very simple, where the survey goes out to every end user, takes no more than 10 minutes for people to complete for the, you know, particular space. And as I've, you know, described it, it focuses on those assessment categories. Once the assessment has been completed for a space, that provides its REC score. And as I said, that's that measure of end user experience. If the score beats the benchmark that I was talking about, the global benchmark, it earns that Best Spaces to Work certification. And that in turn makes it eligible to be considered for your EG Power Properties list. And I know that you guys are looking at other criteria for the judging, which is great. So the fundamental is the does it achieve a best basis to work accreditation? And from there on, other factors, I think, from your judging panel will come into play.
Absolutely. And to access and get yourself onto the Best Spaces to Work programme, we'll put the link in the show notes to this, of course, but it's on the HQO website. Super easy to do, as you said, 10 minutes for completion of the survey.
Yeah, 10 minutes by every end user. Yeah, yeah. The nomination page on our website, beautifully co-branded EGHQO, nominate the space. The team will then set things up ready for you to go through the assessment, and it should be quite a quick process.
And you mentioned that earlier in our conversation, you don't have to be a big shiny tower.
No.
You can be any size of building, any size of occupier. To take part and get in here, and this is, you know, our ambition here is to showcase that small can be mighty as well, and a good comes in all shapes and sizes, and it's about that listening to your people and delivering what a space needs to be great to be the best, and some of the criteria that we'll be looking at here at EG is, you know, we're really committed to sustainability here at EG, so we'll be looking at how the physicality of those buildings are doing their bit for our planet, and a number of other sort of criteria that will just help us make sure that there is a really strong list of inspiration for the rest of the market, you know, because we can all do this. I think, you know, some of the things that you've been talking about, some of the ways that we can make spaces better, don't have to be golf simulators. They don't have to be expensive expensive things. They could just be you know, some plants in there, or listening to your staff and having quiet spaces for people if they do need to do that focused work at their desk.
Yeah, I think this is about shining a light on best practice. And I think as our partnership evolves, I know we're looking towards the event in June. I think as we start to evolve, there will be further components to this where we're not just looking at a standard uniform building. Of course, the world's not like that. And I think we'll be looking at best categories, best, you know, deliver of best service within certain areas, and really sharing that best practice, and we can all learn and develop.
Yeah. And as you say, we've got the event in June, the future of the workspace, and we're going to be revealing there and in the issue of EG that goes to the list, who's on it, who is shining, who can we shine a light on, who can we share experiences with so that other people can come along on the journey too. And I know we're going to have a couple more of these podcasts as well, where hopefully we'll bring to light some of the people who are already doing really, really great stuff, so people can learn and be inspired.
Indeed. And raise, everybody can improve. We love that.
Everybody can improve, could do better.
That's what I used to get at school.
Yeah, me too. Look, well, let's do one last push for how people can get involved in the Power Properties list and why we want them to. And then I'll put all of the links in the show notes. And
wonderful. So yeah, go to the HQO website. There's the landing page there to nominate your space. Once your space has been nominated, the surveys can go out to everybody within the space. Everyone involved, like we said, less than 10 minutes to complete the survey. And that rolls up. Should the score beat the benchmark, you get the Best Spaces to Work certification. And then we move across to the further Power Properties accreditation. But I think the one thing to remember is, even if you're concerned about not meeting the benchmark, there'll be some phenomenal insights. There'll be some great intelligence that you can derive from that. And in your own way, we can work with you to improve what's been delivered.
It's a win-win situation, isn't it?
I'd like to think so, Sam, yes.
Not only if you don't get the certification, it helps so you can get the certification.
Ton of insights.
Then you get the certification, and then you might get on the EG Power Properties list as well. I mean, what could be better?
What more do you want?
I mean, being greedy if you want more than that, quite frankly. Sam, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. I'm really excited about this, to see what the future looks like, actually. Yeah. And I think, you know, reasons to be cheerful is this list, isn't it?
I'd like to think so, yeah. No, it's been great. Sam, thank you for your time. Really enjoyed it. And yeah, look forward to this developing towards the event in June. Thanks a lot.
Fantastic. Thank you.